This one is totally on me. I freely admit. I think I did this last time I made that Central Time miscue was in Nashville, right? In Nashville last year. And the funny thing is I've been up since like 2 a.m. And so I have no excuse for thinking that that 8 o'clock here in New Orleans was 8 o'clock in the East. Unbelievable. And I was coming from the West Coast, right? So that's even, maybe that's what threw me off. I can tell you that yesterday, the travel day, getting here, we certainly needed it. I'll tell you that. I hope everybody has had a chance to catch up on the NHC action and got some really nice feedback. People just seem to love it, and I'm sure it'll come up later today when we talk to Seth Merrow. I know Seth loves it. And what else? Let me. Who else? Let me catch up. And I'm literally on the fly here. Unbelievable. It was in Case. I think it was in. It was in Nashville last year where I thought I was. I don't know. I thought I was on Eastern Time, and I don't know why I would have thought that here either. Because I talked to Tina early, and she was on her way to school. You would think that that would have calibrated for me. Well, we only lost 15 minutes, all right? So no tremendous damage, and we'll catch it up as best we can. We got a lot to do, and there's quite a bit of news to deal with, and specifically, I guess, you know, the concerns and the upset regarding Stronach Group First Racing's letter to the CHRB for tomorrow's meeting. And John Cherwa reporting in the LA Times, this was ground that we actually had covered last week at Ocala with Gary Fenton from the TOC. Bill Nader is going to join us in the next, call it, half hour. And Bill will kind of revisit all those elements that Gary Fenton went over last week, explaining the position of Southern Californian racing interests in this date discussion and why they don't want to see Northern California dates on a scale of what Golden Gate currently has. They don't want to see those awarded, and it just has to do with quite simply with the economics of the simulcast contracts as established, and the, you know, the formatting as established by Sacramento. And does it pit ownership and racing interests and horsemen from Northern Cal against those in Southern Cal? Yeah, it does. But we laid this all out. Gary explained it, and so Bill Nader today, in advance of tomorrow's CHRB meeting, and he'll provide reaction to, and I guess context to what is being interpreted as you know, saber rattling by First. So we'll actually be there on Monday, and for, you know, close to 2 weeks. So we'll be able to have a bit of a a finger on the pulse scenario and reaction from the participants and stakeholders out there. But Bill Nader will get part of that conversation continued. And if you missed Gary Fenton's piece last week, you can catch up, pretty readily. Gary did a fabulous job laying out the situation, and it's difficult. It's a difficult topic, and some very difficult decisions will be involved. So, the Southern California racing interests are trying to, be as receptive and accommodating, it seems, in terms of LoSalle and, what night thoroughbred racing could mean there. Gary explained the condition book approach that could be taken in terms of some lower level to accommodate the horses that would coincide with what Golden Gate has currently. So thorny issues, and Bill Nader will help us get prepared for what I'm sure tomorrow is going to be a highly contentious and closely watched CHRB meeting. That's the top of the news and the first order of business. I do want to mention, I reached out to Pat McKenna. 10 o'clock, season passes and ticket options available for Saratoga for the full meet. So 10 a.m. All right. Keep that in mind. And if we talk to Pat, well, we will. We'll see. All right. Other than that, I want to get excited about what's going to happen here on Saturday. And that that's Louisiana Derby. And Fairgrounds Oaks and everything else. And it was three, how long was the flight yesterday? 3 hours and change. And I went through this card, and the Derby's not easy at all. And looking forward to getting everybody's opinions on it. Marcus Hirsch, and who's here somewhere, I think he's here. I'm sure he's here already. And tomorrow, Frank McGooey will join us. We'll get Frank's opinions on the card. And KK, Kevin Kilroy, and Joe Christofek. So a host of thoughts and perspectives as the meet winds down. And then similarly, we've got to start looking at Turfway. A little bit less of a familiar group in that Ruby. We will look at these two races, by the way, tomorrow for when using Thoroughgraph. Not before we heartily congratulate Jeff Franklin on the terrific job that he did. Right? Jeff helped everybody with Sketchy in that Santa Anita seventh race, which was and Sketchy's win that propelled quite a number of those that cash checks at the NHC, without a doubt. So tomorrow, when using Thoroughgraph, we will look at both of the 3-year-old male races. The two filly races are good too. I thought the Oaks here seemed a little bit more defined with Tarifa and Intricate and Our Pretty Woman. Steve Asmussen. So, but it's the Derby that, and also the Muniz. The Muniz is wild, actually. But when it comes to the Louisiana Derby Saturday, a very interesting situation. You got half the field coming out of the Risen Star. You got a pair from the Rebel, pair of maiden winners. You got the potential. I haven't caught up on what Pletcher is doing with Triple Espresso. He drew wide at Turfway, so I imagine he's running here. But he's a turf war, so we'll see. I'll catch up on that. But he is coming out of the Colonel Liam, and then, of course, Agate Road out of the Sam Davis. So you've got a big mix and match, and technically eight of them have been on site here. So two-thirds of the field preparing. It's very interesting, and the fact that Track Phantom has the wide draw again, and the fact that Tuscan Gold, Chad Brown's, I guess you could call him an upstart, right, off the maiden win. He's got some speed, and Rosario's going to have to spar, it looks like, I would think, a little bit with Tuscan Gold as they come down the stretch the first time. And there's plenty of time for Rosario to find a spot. But other than those two, most everybody on the inside of them are going to come from a little bit off it. In the meantime, Pletcher's Antiquarian, the very nice maiden winner that beat Cornishman on Risen Star Day on the undercard, he's got speed. And Johnny V gets the advantage in terms of, finding position. So it's a fun group. Asmussen, kind of inside out with Hall of Fame. Catching Freedom seems to be on the improve, steady development. Smarty Jones win, and then third behind Sierra Leone and Track Phantom. There's a lot going on. And from a FIG standpoint, I'm anxious to hear what Jeff has to say. But Agate Rhodes, Sam Davis, stands up pretty well from a FIG standpoint. So there's a lot going on in here. Common Defense, second in the Rebel. McPeak, he's got the two McPeaks are next to each other. Real Men Violin as well. So Honor Marie comes back out of the Risen Star. Had kind of a delayed start to, was kind of rallying. So it's a very, very good addition of the Louisiana Derby. The Muniz. The Muniz, of course, has got everybody coming out of the fairgrounds. And that includes the top four finishers. Three out of the Pegasus too. At the top of the page, I've got seven of the 12 as potential winners in here. So the Muniz is tricky read. It's a good card. A couple of maiden races early on. You got the Louisiana Breds, the Crescent City Derby, and the Crescent City Oaks. How about Jake Delhomme and in the New Orleans, right? Touch Upon a Star. Obviously the one to catch, and he's only won 10 of his last 11. So looking forward to this. say the least, and always happy to be here. I mean, it's hard not to. I told Tina, I told her, yeah, she's coming. She's going to come to California for her Easter week vacation, and I said, "Gosh," I said, "I wouldn't have minded if Easter had been, you know." She hasn't been out west in a long time, actually, so she'll certainly enjoy it. But this is the sort of, I don't know, for whatever reason, we love I love having her here. We've had three New Orleans experiences. So, all right, so that's the introduction, a little bit to the card, and they are racing today. So we'll probably see Kevin and Joe before we get off the air. Let me tell you what else is going on. I told you about Bill Nader. I'm supposed to have Pete Fornatale. Pete's back from, he went to Cheltenham. I was going to get a Cheltenham report, and he's got something going on. I think a fundraiser. But I did not hear back from him. So I'm going to reach out and see... see what's up. All right, because if he's not, then we'll go directly to Bill Nader. Sid, of course, Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale, and we've got a few topics for him. Dave Hill. Dave Hill's going to join us. The tournament, by the way, I sent out the notices yesterday. It took me forever to find the old At the Races tournament challenge at Yahoo. Not as prominent as it as it used to be. The way they're merchandising it and advertising it. So I didn't find it when I looked. On Monday, but I finally found it and sent out the invites. All right, so join in. Prizes for the top finishers, as always. Usually a cool something fun out of the racing memorabilia collection of what, and also books, and you know, got plenty of stuff to share with winners. But Dave's going to join us, and he. He's ready to go. He's ready to rock. I guess he had a Calcutta yesterday that he joined. Hammers dragged me, has convinced me to join the one that he's been running for years and years. And he runs one that's very different. It's very clever, actually. He explained it to me while we were together. How his NCAA. Not a bracket at all. Everybody picks six teams, any six teams, and there's a scoring system. It sounds like fun. So I'm going to give it a try. My friends, I guess it was my baseball buddies. They used to have one where they would draft teams. It wasn't too far off what Hammer does now that I think about it. They would draft an order and then, you know, come back the other direction. So if somebody picks once, then two, then three, four, five, six, and then six picks a second time, then they work back in the other direction and until all the teams are distributed, and then there was a scoring system they had. Those guys did that for years. But obviously, you know, these first 4 days, and you know, for those that join up for the first time in the bracket that we do, the long time the tagline for the At the Races tournament challenge. NCAA tourney preempting ATR since 2005. And if you're old enough to remember back to the early days of the show, you know, the show, you know, was 4 to 7 for years. And, you know, back when, especially because we were on Sirius, and Sirius does not have, you know, one of the cool things about the merger between Sirius and XM was that XM always had more sports bandwidth, more sports channels, because they had baseball. So they needed a wider set of channels. And XM or Sirius never had as many sports channels at the, you know, back in the early days. And so the first round of the NCAAs would always preempt us, and not just the NCAAs. We were preempted by the World Cricket Championship one year. I remember getting Brian Hamilton called and said, "Steve, no show next whatever Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday for the cricket championship." and I think one year for maybe even for the College World Series once. This is back like in 2005 or six. It would have been 2006, 7, 8 in that range. So I made that the theme of our bracket challenge years ago. It's kind of funny, but then we moved to the mornings, and by the time we would get done at noon, now that I think about that too, the baseball, I remember there was a baseball, there was definitely a College World Series once, because I don't know if you remember this, when we first moved to the mornings, we were not 9 to noon, we were 10 to 1, and then pushed up 1 hour. But when we went to 1 o'clock, there were a few occasions where the last hour would get preempted for, but then the merger happened, and I don't know, the bandwidth expanded. So those days are over. All right, I guess my guess is that Pete's recording something because he's not responding. So let's go to Bill Nader and get you know, what is clearly an unsettling topic with the seeming threats to.
Good morning, Steve.
Hi, Bill. Good morning. Hey.
Yeah.
Sorry. I was starting an introduction as I reached for you, and you know, a lot of listeners that were tuned in last week when we were in Ocala, they heard Gary Fenton, because I asked Gary, you know, about this topic, and you know, he laid it all out. But this letter from Craig Fravel, more or less saber-rattling, you know, regarding the sale or closure of Santa Anita, I guess it got its desired effect because it has people, you know, gravely concerned. I'd love for you to explain to everybody from your perspective and what you're dealing with, the North, South, Northern Cal, Southern Cal conflict, essentially, that'll come to a head tomorrow in the CHRB meeting.
Well, I think, Steve, for a quick recap, the meeting, that was sort of a precursor to what's coming up tomorrow. And I think January, the decision was to delay any decision to March to give a bit more time for the North to put forth their proposal. Now, just as a brief recap, First Racing made the business decision to close Golden Gate Fields last year with the intent to redirect money from the North to the South to help sustain operations at Santa Anita. So the intent there was to consolidate, to try to strengthen Santa Anita and preserve its future. As everyone knows, there's no ancillary revenue in California to support horse racing and breeding. There's been a declining horse population. Field sizes have been low. The number of race days and number of races has been in steep decline. You know, from the standpoint of safety, welfare, integrity, California's in a very good place, but there's $20 million annually in regulatory costs, and it's heavily subsidized by Southern California, and most would agree that it needs a reset. So California, in summary, has limited resources. Northern California, as we said in January, is fighting for its survival. And Southern California may be just a length or two behind and gaining ground. So it's really contentious. The letter that Fravel issued yesterday, I think, was a desperate plea to really let everybody know, including the regulators, how dire the situation is. So it's that's where we are going into this meeting tomorrow, and it's a sad situation, because no matter which way you go, there's going to be some pain.
Bill, even though Gary went through this last week with me, explain the financials, the simulcast money, and what the, you know, what the benefit would be here if the North and would be limited, you know, just to the traditional fair dates, and the Southern and the Golden Gate dates essentially went away, and what that, you know, how that revenue then essentially gets transferred, you know, to Southern California coffers.
Okay, there's five tracks in the North that are the traditional fair tracks: Santa Rosa, Sacramento, Pleasanton, Fresno, and Ferndale. And the traditional fair circuit in Northern California would be about 13 to 15 weeks. So that leaves, say, 37 to 39 weeks when potentially, if you look at one scenario where there would be no racing in the North, and during that time when there's no racing in the North, there was legislation passed in September, AB 1074, where everyone in the industry came together and agreed to get this legislation passed in pretty quick order, which is unusual here, that if no racing in the North, money that's wagered in the North, which would typically remain in the North to support racing there, would be redirected to the South to support racing in Southern California. Now, I heard the interview with Gary, and I think he stopped you dead in your tracks when you learned that the reciprocal simulcast signals from North to South or South to North are at no cost. So what that means is, you know, if you look at, say, a world in California post the closing of Golden Gate Fields in June, the trade would be the fair tracks in the North would be provided to the South at no cost. And in exchange for that, the North would receive Del Mar, Santa Anita, and Los Alamitos at no cost. The regulatory costs, though, are the big thing, and that's an annual bill of $20 million, and that supports the cost of the CHRB and HISA, and about a little over 80% of that is borne by Southern California. So this, the way it's structured and the way it's been, if you go back to, say, you know, the early part, you know, 2000 to 2008, you had Bay Meadows and Golden Gate. And, you know, at least there was some balance there. Now it's no longer there. And it's going to be very, very important, I think, that in terms of a reset on cost, that at least, and I think both sides would agree to that. I think both sides would agree that there's room there to make it more fair and more equitable. But that won't be discussed, I'm sure, tomorrow. That will be something that might be discussed in an upcoming meeting, maybe in April.
So essentially, Bill, there's really, I guess there's two considerations. Can the concept of some lower, condition book levels at Del Mar and Santa Anita, plus the potential that Doc Allred has offered at Los Al with some night thoroughbred racing, can the Northern California horse population and stakeholders, can that accommodate them? And then secondly, can they be convinced that this is better for the overall future of California racing in general, particularly because the showpiece, the centerpiece of California racing is Santa Anita, and concern for its future should outweigh virtually any other consideration.
Well, that's something the tracks in Southern California put together the plan that was presented in January. And I think a lot of people misinterpreted that as, Southern California was putting that out as a primary position when it was really more a contingency in the event that Northern California couldn't find something that was viable, that the plan would be to really use Los Alamitos at night to change the statute to allow for lower level claiming horses to run there at any distance. Currently, the limitation at Los Al at night is it has to be a distance of 4.5 furlongs, and it can't be anything but 4.5 furlongs for claiming horses of 5,000 or less. So the plan was to open that up, as well as you said, maybe lower the benchmark low claiming price at Santa Anita and Del Mar to something like $62.50. So that was the plan. The North, I would say, rejected that and preferred, to stay in their own region and have a full-time circuit. And that is the question that we asked in January, is really, it's gut check time here. Is it still possible for California to support two full-time circuits with the limited resources that we have? Now, there's 3 days of racing max in a week in the North. And for most of the year in the southern part of the state, it's limited to 3 days a week. So, it's a question that we have to come to grips with. The contingency plan in Southern California. Still many of the horses in the North might go elsewhere and may not take up that offer. On the other hand, if the North is allowed to continue with a year-round schedule and it's still two full-time circuits, the outcome, in my view, would be that would put another dent in Southern California, because the money wouldn't be redirected. So that would be quite clear. And that redirect money is roughly, according to our analysis, about $17 million a year, based on, if the fares remaining within their current traditional Northern Fair circuit of 13 to 15 weeks. And from that $17 million, about half of that would go to purses and half would go to the tracks. What the North has put forward for tomorrow's meeting is a plan to run at Pleasanton. And this proposal only speaks, Steve, to 2024. So it's talking about 26 race days to kind of kick off this new entity, which is Golden State Racing. And that would be from the period of October 19th to December 15th, the 26 days. A couple of things in the application, that this came out only about a week ago when they submitted the proposal to the CHRB. So we haven't had a lot of time to really take a look at it. But a couple of things. One, the takeout. that's something that I think could be corrected, hopefully easily. That takeout is higher than Golden Gate. It's about 1.34 points higher on a lot of the bet types. The double, it's 4 points higher because they use the fair takeout. So, and that's the takeout that you would see at the traditional fairs, but this would be something different. This is a replacement for Golden Gate. So hopefully they could take a look at that. And if they were to get dates, they'd have to correct the takeout. The other thing would be the purses. Daily Racing Forum reported that their average daily purses over these 26 days would be $200,000 per day. I see it and I read it a little bit differently. I think it's a little bit less than that, but irrespective, the idea that they could generate handle that would support purses close to $200,000 a day, I think is unrealistic. When you shift racing from Golden Gate to Pleasanton, to be able to support that kind of purse structure, your handle would need to be identical to what it was during the same period last year at Golden Gate. That's just not going to happen because it's from a brand perspective, going from Golden Gate to Pleasanton, where you're running on synthetic and turf at Golden Gate. Pleasanton is dirt only. Pleasanton is a Northern California fair. I just don't see, you know, the out-of-state market that bets into California just accepting Pleasanton as the replacement for Golden Gate and that handle to hold up and support that purse structure. And talking with Larry Switzlander yesterday, he said, look, you know, that's where, you know, that we could lower purses in the middle of that 26-day period. So the potential for a purse cut, I think, is if they were to get this approved tomorrow, I think the chance of a purse cut there would be, you know, it could happen within 3 weeks. Because I just think the handle would drop by, I would think, possibly as much as 40%. So that's something that people have to have their eyes open to, whether they be owners, breeders, or regulators, trainers, et cetera. So, and for Santa Anita, I mean, look, the first racing, you know, with the way they handled the closing of Golden Gate, you know, it was upsetting to a lot of people. You know, there were missteps along the way. It certainly wasn't perfect. There were other things that, you know, there's, you know, the North didn't feel at first racing, respected the North as much as it should, you know, when you hear that. And in the North, you know, no one wants to see a track close. No one wants to see people, you know, pushed out of their jobs and having their, you know, reset their lives and go somewhere else. But two full-time circuits in California is, for the resources that we have, I mean, consolidation is the other route. And I think it's going to be very tough, you know, when you look at both sides to kind of walk away from that position. It's a different time or in a different place. We don't have the ancillary revenue here. It's you know, somehow, some way, we're going to have to find our way to find the future for California, where California can still be the major player that the country and really the global community expect for events such as, example, the Breeders' Cup, where Santa Anita's become the go-to track. You know, in terms of first racing, you know, to be fair to them, and I do think they take a lot of hits, but in 2019, they stepped up. I mean, I wasn't here at the time, but I've heard the story repeatedly from so many people that it was Belinda Stronach and Aiden Butler that helped lead the fight to, during a time of crisis, to help rescue the sport when it needed change, and they were at the forefront of that. Again, it's the go-to track for the Breeders' Cup, Santa Anita. I think it's the most beautiful thoroughbred racetrack anywhere in the world. I think it's right in that conversation, and I've had the luxury and the opportunity to see a lot of them in my time, but Santa Anita is absolutely at the top of the list. They've put in the new Tapia training track. It's certainly the foundation of racing in California when you look at the role that Santa Anita plays. take it away and just about everything crumbles in the state, racing and breeding. Without Santa Anita, I can't imagine any chance for Northern California to survive. You know, recently they announced that they would fund California Crown Day, which I think caught everybody, including me, by surprise that they would implement such a big event at a time when purses were greatly overpaid and exceedingly high. But, you know, it was something that they're going to fund on their own. And when you finally, you know, stepped back and really understood it, you could only appreciate that, okay, they were making a big bang investment to really shake up the landscape here and try to really send a jolt and get people interested in California racing in Southern California, and not only from the racing side, but the entertainment side, to bring people out to the racetrack and see what a beautiful thing it is to be present in, you know, on a late September day at Santa Anita Park, which is historical landmark number 934. When you see the sign coming into the track, it's something to see, as everybody listening to the show knows. So they've done a lot of good things, and they've done some other things that people will point to and say, you know, deduct a point here and deduct a point there. But if you look at it objectively and holistically, what they're saying, I think, in the letter is, we need some help. You know, we need to feel as though we belong here and you want us here. And in their view, they think by closing Golden Gate, they would protect the Queen Mother, Santa Anita. And now they're thinking, probably through that letter, that that's probably not happening. So there's a bit of panic in that letter. And there's also the threat, which is, you know, that maybe they'll look at different options for not only Santa Anita Park, but also San Luis Rey, which is the training center. And if that happens, and I think they're at least being transparent about it, and then it's up to everybody to really crunch that and think, is it real or is it just an idle threat? And take a look. As somebody said, there's two houses burning and there's one bucket of water. What are you going to do? And I got to tell you, it's very, it's a very sad situation, because as I said earlier, there are a lot of people involved. And when you really look at it, I think the go-to question is the future of California, because there's going to be pain one way or the other, but what's going to put California in the best place going forward, with this rich history and this rich tradition and these great racetracks, not just Santa Anita, Del Mar, and others. And Golden Gate was a pretty nice racetrack too. But if you go back to 2022, sports betting, Prop 26, 27, it failed. And I think when that happened, that probably marked the beginning of the end for Golden Gate. That was a chance for Golden Gate. If Prop 26 had passed and there was sports betting, I think Golden Gate would still be, I'm sure Golden Gate would still be in play. But sports betting isn't even on the ballot this year. So there's nothing coming in the near term that could change things to make things a little bit better economically. And, you know, with those limited resources, tough times and tough decisions. I don't envy the CHRB. I know that, you know, everybody looks at it. If you ask me how anyone looks at what's the right thing to do in California, I just ask what's their address, and I can tell you which side they're on. And that's where the lines are drawn.
Does the TOC have, you know, a position that they're endorsing? And, you know, there was that point where Johnny Tabota and the two other northern representatives resigned from TOC. Is there an active input in TOC from northern stakeholders?
We'll have a meeting this morning, 11 o'clock our time, and we'll have a full board discussion. And I can, you know, so, and that's when we'll, you know, because everything's breaking so late in the game here. And we intentionally push this meeting to the day before the CHRB meeting, so we'd have the latest information. And, you know, the Golden State Racing didn't issue their proposal until last week. And everyone might recall that their track of choice up until February was Cal Expo in Sacramento, and then they pivoted to Pleasanton. So fair enough. We got the information. We've looked at that. Then this letter dropped yesterday. So at least with the, fortunately for us, with this meeting, we had no idea that this letter was coming. But now with the meeting today at 11, you know, everything's on the table and we can have a full discussion. I think, you know, from the standpoint of the TOC, we have owners in the north. We have owners in the southern part of the state. I think it's important that everyone comes together and just think, well, what's the best for the TOC? Is whatever's best for the TOC is best for California. I like to remind people when the C in TOC is California. It's not N or S for North or South. It's for California. So I think we have to look at it and try to determine what's best for California going forward. There's a lot to it. I think the other key point that we'll need to bring out today is that for owners and trainers and breeders in the north, the purse projections that are put forth in the draft application are not realistic. So it's speculative for me to say that, but our analysis is pretty good. We've been at this a long time, and we know, and we've been, we can, we know what the realistic numbers are. And I think people need to know that. Now they may say in Northern California, that's okay. But you know, they've grown accustomed to lower purses with the purse cuts that were implemented in the first part of 2024. And maybe they believe they could survive on a lower purse structure, but at least it has to be, they have to know that going in. I don't think they should walk into something and only learn it, you know, 13 days into a 26-day meet, that purses would be lower. But that's something that has to be transparent.
Were you made aware of what was going to be in this missive from Craig Fravel?
The day before, we were told that a letter might be coming. So that we had about 24 hours notice that a letter might be coming. And then yesterday I did reach out to Craig and asked if a letter would be issued. And he said, yeah, it would come later in the day and would send a copy, which he did.
If we go back, and I think, yeah, it has to predate you coming in to TOC. There was great speculation going back, I want to say, 2020, 2021, in the wake of, you know, the casualties, the incidents in 2019 at Santa Anita, which prior management had a complete hand in. There was speculation, Bill, that there were as many as three different groups that made overtures to the then monikered Stronach Group about buying Santa Anita. And obviously this is, you know, this is speculative and you know, maybe not a valuable tangent to go off on, but I mean, there are people that would pay the market price for Santa Anita and with the intent of continuing racing. Are you privy to any conversations along those lines? And you know, how would the TOC, I imagine the TOC would welcome a potential suitor.
Yeah, I'm not aware of it. I think the price tag for that property, 320 acres, you know, very close to Los Angeles, it's definitely worth a lot of money. From as a racetrack in the current business scenario with no secondary stream of income, it's difficult to be profitable. I would imagine from the numbers I've heard that Santa Anita loses about $5 million a year. So based on the last 5 years, maybe $5 to $6 million a year loss on a property that's worth, I don't know what the number would be, Steve, but it's probably close to $1 billion. Maybe somewhere between 750 million to a billion. So, I don't know who would step in and make a purchase like that, but you know, if there was a suitor to do that, I think, yeah, the TOC would, and it was to support horse racing, and for continuity, keep it going. Yeah, of course we would support that, but I don't know who the buyer might be and who they were, you know, a few years ago.
Well, if I'm not mistaken, I think Gary Barber and some others had one set of potential investors, Patrick Bean Cohn, and his you know, I think his you know, his connections. And there was I'm not sure if Mike Pegram or there was a third. There were three entities that had kind of come to kind of bubbled to the surface at the time. So anyway, I mean that was in the back of my head, Bill, knowing that you know, there's you know, tremendous anxiety that the way in which this was introduced yesterday, you know, is just triggered. I mean, it's a bit of, you know, it's a bit of an incendiary device, but I suppose that's part of the strategy of approaching it this way, and with a, you know, with a threat of a sale or a closure.
Yeah, and if you took the other view, you might say, well, at least they're being transparent and saying, look, we want to put you on notice that we're now looking at this, so you have full awareness before you make any decision where we stand. And so on one part, it looks threatening. On the other side, it might look, okay, well, at least we, you know, the cards are on the table. But in terms of prospective buyers, if they were to really pursue the exit strategy, I'm sure they would hopefully give, you know, first right of refusal to potential suitors that would keep it as a racetrack. You know, that would be the right thing to do. But, you know, let's hope it doesn't come to that.
Well, certainly. Bill Nader joining us from TOC, ahead of tomorrow's CHRB meeting that will address beyond the June closure. And then, of course, how that translates for Southern California and the simulcast revenues that by legislative edict determine where that money flows. And the intent that that FIRST has stated, the need to help it sustain racing at Santa Anita. Has Del Mar weighed in on this at all? And
I haven't spoken to Del Mar about it. I mean, everything was going at a fever pitch fast pace yesterday. But for Del Mar, you know, I mean, Santa Anita, like I said earlier, is the foundation for all of California. I can't imagine a North without a Santa Anita. And it would be very tough on Del Mar without a Santa Anita, because Santa Anita is the heavy lifting for Del Mar. I worked many, many years, as you know, at NYRA. And Aqueduct and Belmont would do that, serve that purpose for Saratoga. And then Saratoga would reap the rewards every, well, it does reap the rewards every summer. Del Mar similarly has that position in California with those choice summer dates, 31 days in the summer, and then 13 days in the fall. And to try to stretch Del Mar, which you almost would have to do in a world where there's no Santa Anita, that would put an enormous burden on Del Mar to take that up. And that would, you know, that would, I think that would be tough on them. So, and I guess to try to, you know, for horsemen to have a place to race and train 12 months a year, everything would, there'd be pressure on everybody everywhere to be able to accommodate that. So, look, I think that would, I can't speak for Del Mar, but I think we need to look at every possible scenario now and get prepared. So that just adds another layer of complexity in trying to, you know, map out what the future looks like. But certainly I think Santa Anita and the role it plays with the winter meet, the spring meet, and the fall meet to replace that just puts tremendous pressure on all of California, both in the southern and the northern part of the state.
Well, obviously, this will be a CHRB meeting that will be carefully and closely attended and listened in on. And Bill, I imagine that these issues were a little bit more than you expected or signed on for, but you know, it's also something that, you know, you've got the kind of experience to potentially, you know, help all parties, you know, go forward. It's got to be very challenging, and I'm sure you know, just exasperating to some degree with you know, trying to navigate just a nonstop series of issues and crises, honestly.
I had dinner last night with Alan Gutterman, who you probably know. A lot of people in the industry know Alan. And he said, geez, things were going along great in California until you got here. That was his way of trying to cheer me up. But on a serious note, I mean, there was, you know, this, so much at stake, and we can't forget about the people, whether it be the people now in Northern California or the people in Southern California, which I'm sure woke up this morning feeling a lot different about where their future lies, and they're nervous and they're scared. And in the North, they feel, you know, they're feeling the same thing. So it's just an awful thing to kind of go through to try to figure this thing out and to really come to the right decision and to look to the future and try to find the most sustainable and optimal decision. So it's you know, but that's, as you said, that's why the people that are in charge need to step up and try to find the right solution, because so much hangs in the balance. So that's where we are. I mean, it's unfortunate, but it's real, and we've got to deal with it.
Well, and Gary, I thought Gary was very gentle and succinct when he tried to make the case that, I mean, if there's going to be a California racing of any kind long term, that everyone has to look to the South, and that's where things are the healthiest. I'm sure some people would argue, that it's not healthy the way you would characterize a healthy business and structure, but it did make sense. I mean, the way Gary laid it out, I as difficult as it could be to confront for Northern California stakeholders, it does seem like the right approach long term for everybody to have somewhere viable to race their race their horses. People like people this too. I mean, people like to go to the track and see their horses run, and if they're Northern Californian breeders and owners, they want to do it and see it there. I get that. This is really thorny, Bill, and I feel for everybody involved. It's very difficult.
Well, thanks, Steve, and stay tuned. We're about 24 hours away now for the start of the meeting tomorrow, and everyone will get a chance to voice their views, and hopefully we can come to the right outcome and get through this.
Bill Nader and the TOC and the situation confronting virtually everybody from track operations, the breeders, the owners, the players, everything. A lot at stake. Bill, I appreciate it, and anything we can communicate here, I'm happy to.
Thank you, Steve.
Bill Nader, everybody, and Bill's long, successful career in track management, and that includes Hong Kong, two different stints. This is really tough. I can't imagine having to. I mean, it's kind of a triage scenario, I suppose, to some degree. If you wanted an expanded explanation as well, Gary Fenton's visit at Ocala also would augment a lot of what what Bill just laid out. Let me get to Sid. We're a little late to him, and Sire Watch. Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale. And Sid, good morning.
Hi, Steve. How are you?
All right. Just sort of listening, listening to Bill Nader facing this this Northern Cal, Southern Cal situation, and what amounts to what seems like a sincere threat from. From Stronach, from First Racing regarding Santa Anita. I don't think anybody can envision. Listen, nobody who could have envisioned no Arlington. So
that's right.
So I guess it's not easy, but it's reasonable to say if you can't envision a place like Santa Anita disappearing. You never would have envisioned an Arlington disappearing.
And don't forget Hollywood Park.
Right. It's
it's a sobering news today, you know.
Yeah, yeah. It's we seem to deal with with the sobering news on a very regular basis, unfortunately.
Yeah, it seems like every week it's sobering news.
Well, at the same time, the racing. I was with Tom Rooney over the weekend at the NHC, and I mean, it's hard to get upbeat when you're coming off a conversation like that. But then at the same time, we had a room full of horse players that that were absolutely thrilled to be there, and made you feel like you're part of something, very vibrant and positive. So I mean, there's things that should, buoy us, but then you deal with, with a conversation like this and some of these realities, makes it hard. I mean, to be optimistic at times. So I know there's no easy answers. That's the bottom line.
It's all kind of related in ways that might not be obvious, but let's face it. I mean, we're all talking about less racing, smaller foal crops. It seems it's all tied in together in the bigger picture. It's just a matter of sitting back and looking at how everything kind of gets linked.
Well, we talk about that. I mean, the game is, there's tons of connectivity. I mean, it's a...
That's a good way to put it, yeah.
I mean, this is an organic, an organic entity, and it's an interdependent entity. That's what makes it, so challenging. And if there's, if there's segments that are, and specific, arenas that are dragging things down or making it hard on other, on other entities. You talk about the foal crop that gets to the horse population issue and field size and handle. And I mean, there's so many parts of this that just keeps, that exerts pressures against the other. So, on a breeding front, and suppose that another piece of news, bad news, I didn't get to, Monday, we were still, in the, the shadow of the NHC, but the passing of Improbable, Windstar, it happened at Rood and Riddle, was being treated for ataxia, he'll end up having three crops, but I...
It's always sad when a horse dies, and it's sad when, a promising young stallion with no runners yet succumbs as well, yeah.
Well, as a city zip, right, and what... Well, he's got other sons, right? I mean, it's...
Yeah, but this was certainly the big hope for City Zip.
Yeah.
You know, when you're... When your major stallion son dies, you know, it's, I mean, things happen in life, but, it's interesting how, and it's not to say nothing will happen. The line won't continue. I mean, you look at, you know, the Seeking the Gold sire line, for example, you know, it looked like it was not going to go on. And then he had the one son who had one crop and died. But from that one crop, Dubawi appeared and, you know, exploded the line again. So only time will... the answer to the question of whether, you know, this line continues. I mean, the same for Arrogate too, right? His sire on Bridal Song, you know, he's got a good son in Liam's Map, but Arrogate was supposed to be the, you know, was hopefully going to be the big savior of it. He had three crops, but now he's had... of course, then he had a good son die too, Cave Rock. But Arcangelo is there, and so there's always hope.
Agreed. And of course, you have no idea. We won't know anything until later, second half of the year, with his babies.
Yeah,
and, and, you know, and for those that should probably get Dr. Alday to for an explanation. I mean, ataxia is a neurologic, well, it can be neurologic. It's one of those things in horses that it is somewhat mysterious, and can have, it can come from many different areas. It can be something, you know, that sets in on a horse, you know, from infection, and from things it ingests. It can be, you know, it could be something that set upon him, you know, as a stallion, you know, for those that aren't aware of, you know, the physical demands, you know, it's something, essentially it's a short circuit between the spinal cord and the horse's brain. And it can be a vertebrae injury. I mean, there's it's a very tricky thing to deal with. I mean, the first thing I thought of to associate it with was the wobbles. For those that, you know, that know the term and know the condition, the wobbles, which usually hits young horses, and it's neurologic, and they get disoriented, and they you know, they'll lose balance, and it's very similar to ataxia. So I should get Dr. Bramlage or Dr. Alday to explain it, because it's it's something that's one of those things that, you know, veterinary medicine chases, and it's a, you know, it's a very difficult thing to, you know, to isolate
well, as you say, the neurological aspects of, you know, various quote unquote diseases is, you know, it's fairly prevalent in racehorses. And you're absolutely right. Sometimes it's manifested late. Sometimes it's manifested earlier. A perfect example of an early manifestation was the horse Shamar Dal, who, as a foal, exhibited these symptoms, and actually was given away by one of the Hamdans, one of the Maktoums, to the trainer. And then he turned around and, you know, obviously became a top racehorse, won the French Derby, and then became the conduit for carrying on John's Causeway's line in Europe. Really the big figurehead for Giants Causeway until Not This Time came on the scene in this country. Now, that's an early case. It was corrected or managed, and the horse went on to a successful racing and breeding career. Later manifestations of these are, you know, Seattle Slough had it. One I'm familiar with is Tale of a Cat. He has to be managed very carefully because of a neurological condition. So, you know, it's we sometimes are unaware of it all happening, but, you know, with social media, with more transparency now, it's spoken of more than it was ever in the past, and more people are aware of these things.
Well, we'll see what emerges from his offspring. Thoughts out to Windstar, who they were involved early and invested in him, you know, early on. Watts Humphrey, right? Watts Humphrey bred Improbable. And he was he was a favorite. I liked him. Sid, we've got a big weekend ahead, and I have not talked to you since the sale ended. Do you have any sale anecdotes? Any reaction to what went on? How about the win for win?
Yeah, that was absolutely huge. And you know, 1.8 million. Wow. But you know, this horse was the fastest breezer at that sale. It's filly. Apparently, she's an outstanding physical as well. And you know, the people that bought her, you know, they've had tremendous success at 2-year-old sales. So it's a great result for everybody. The stallion, Ocala Stud, that stands the horse and actually bred this filly, and it's obviously a lot of money. It's not the kind of price range that somebody looking for residual value is going to be following. But as Bob Baffert said, you know, hopefully they try to make her own pedigree. And, you know, it's the same combination a few years ago when Not This Time was not known from his first crop. They bought for $1 million dollars or maybe even more, a filly that turned out to be Princess Noor. And then she made her own pedigree. Of course, at that time, nobody realized that Not This Time was going to be a massive stallion. And of course, you know, they raced her and then they sold her for a profit. So, you know, it takes a certain level of buyer to play at that level, obviously. And Zidane has had success at that level. So it's not surprising that he ended up being the winner.
They, from what I understood, the reach that this horse covers a tremendous amount of ground. That she's got a huge stride on her, and I did reach out to both Mrs. Weber and Mike Trombetta, who were predictably excited by it, and particularly for Live Oak, has had in recent years some bad luck with stallion prospects. I mean, brilliant speed, to honor and serve. Ended up exported, so it'd be nice for Live Oak to have win. Do well, and
yeah, and it's also a great kind of thing because win is one of the rare Sunday Silence flying stallions in the country,
right?
By Hat Trick, yeah. So, yeah, that's a really nice advertisement for that. The stallion only stands for 5,000. He's a Grade One winner, though. And, hopefully she could become the Princess Noor for win. That would be fantastic. And then, speaking of diversity and various sire lines, I mean, if this horse were to actually become a legitimate stallion, that's a fantastic outcome,
Mrs. Weber, and Live Oak, she bred a handful of mares. She had interest in Hat Trick, and the idea of, interest meaning, not a financial interest, but an interest in, in getting to Sunday, I think to the Sunday Silence line through him.
Uh-huh.
And, it really, you think about the decades. I mean, she's going on five, Live Oak is going on five decades. She's had protracted success, with acquisitions, augmenting, the broodmare band that she maintains. That to me, that's why, that's one of the nice things about what might be a success, in the offing. And of course, for the O'Farrells and Ocala Stud, and they all have, they've got Live Oak, I know, has retained percentage of win. So it's quite a story,
And win, by the way. Also, Airdrie Stud has an interest in winning as well.
Saw that too. Which
so this formula kind of worked for them with Gervin, who was also at Ocala. He hit big, and then he made his way to Kentucky to Airdrie, and it's very, very smart move by Airdrie to do this kind of stuff. But they've always had a history of standing Grade One winners, sometimes not by the most fashionable stallions. And the greatest example, of course, is Indian Charlie, Bob Baffert horse, who won 4 out of 5, California bred, and of course made a big name for himself at Airdrie, particularly as the sire of Uncle Mo, who has, blown up the entire line in recent times.
Just also, Sid, any of the other first croppers that we were keeping an eye on? Anything else catch your eye, or did you hear any?
Yeah, I have heard something, and in fact, I'm going to do a article on it sometime this week. But the horse that apparently maybe is under the radar for a lot of people, but a lot of important people are talking about him, is Game Winner. Game Winner is a champion. Interesting, because he's by Candy Rye, just like Gun Runner. And, it's quite possible that he could hit. He's certainly got the qualifications. He had a $500,000 horse at OBS, And, you know, Donato Lanny, who bought that horse, told me of all the first crop stallions, well, you know, the freshman stallions this year, he's impressed him the most. In fact, he said if he had a mare, he'd breed to him.
Interesting. And there were not a ton of them. There were 13, and three came out. One was an RNA, but otherwise, here are the greens. DJ Stables bought one for $140. Dare to Dream bought one for $100. Happy 10th Stable, $50,000. Actually, there was a second RNA. Jet Horse, Peter Miller, $200,000. Jimmy DeVito bought one for $150. You mentioned Donato bought one for Michael Lund Peterson for $500,000. And the Three Amigos, Pegram, Watson, and Whiteman.
Baffert is going to
have two of them.
Both those, two of them.
And, yep.
You know, here's the interesting thing. If you go, since you have it up, now look at what they all breezed in, and you will note it's stunning. A bunch of them,
ten
quite
plus,
a few,
yeah,
10 flat.
Yep.
You know.
Yep. And 10-1, 10-1, 10, actually, one a little slower. One went, the Three Amigos, the one for $250, did a quarter in 20-2.
Exactly. And the others, the vast majority of them, except for one that was 10-4, they were in 10 flats.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now that's, you know, that's a real sign, isn't it? That a whole, group of them are working that fast.
No, very much.
So I checked with Ben Glass, because the Gary and Mary West obviously have a bunch. He said he's been getting good signs from them. He said, of course, since they're breeding to race, their horses haven't been breezing yet because they weren't prepared for two-year-old races. You know, what they do is they wait, they x-ray the joints to make sure they're all closed before they start breezing them. However, he did tell me that Georgie Villa Gomez, who breaks all the West horses down in Ocala, has been very, very complimentary about the game winners that they have, too. So it seems like, you know, these aren't isolated incidents. And so if you're really kind of looking for a horse, you know, that's under the radar right now, he is one. And he's got all the credentials. He, I mean, like I said, he was a Eclipse champion at two. And he's by, you know, he's by Candy Ride. And he's out of an AP Indy mare.
As was improbable.
Yeah. It's certainly a piece of news that's, I haven't read about anywhere.
No.
You know, the feeling of that horse. So you're getting some kind of scoop right now.
I like it.
Yeah.
There was good buzz. There were only seven, but there seemed like there was a good buzz about Honor AP, Sid.
I'm sure, you know, he's another a grade one winner and a fantastic looking horse.
Just, let's see, there were one RNA'd, one was out, and then, well, there was a $300,000. The Ammermans bought one for $300,000. They bought it from Carrie Frommer. And then sort of, typical $50,000, $30,000, $35,000. And 15 Deuce Greathouse bought one. You know, that's part of the fun when you look at these first crops. See who bought what. There's, you know, I talk about that.
You know, all buyers aren't equal. That's the thing.
Yep.
You know, you can do studies of these 2-year old sales and come up with certain conclusions, but if you just isolate on some buyers, they may have exceptional results.
Yep.
like Donato Annie, Bob Baffert, for example. Of course, they do tend to pay the most money for them as well. But, you know, these, like I mentioned, when I heard this about Game Winner, I just went and looked at what each one worked in, and I was just stunned. Because, you know, when you have a group of horses working that fast, it tells you that it's not one isolated case.
Well, we'll be watching. We've got April to come yet, and plenty more to distribute. Sid, any thoughts? Did you look at all at? I'm down here at Fairgrounds. Did you look at the little Louisiana Derby?
Yeah, I mean I can't remember his name right now. The Gunrunner Colt, Earl Macbread, Hall of Fame.
Yeah,
I think Hall of Fame, very lightly raced, is a horse that really has a lot of potential. First, of course, he's by Gunrunner as well, but you know he's got the type of profile that I think is meant for a horse to be a good summer 3-year old, spring summer 3-year old. So I think he's one that keep an eye on.
Sid Fernando, Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale. Sid, let me. We fell behind because I no longer wear a watch. I guess we've all got a alarm clock in our pocket at all times or bedside, and yet I still manage to somehow botch. I thought I was back on Eastern time, and I wasn't. So I blew it a little bit. I'm sorry. I can't believe I came through Tampa and the Ocala trip and didn't get to see you. You sound better though. You sound like cleared up a little.
It has been clearing up. In fact, I'm no longer taking medication. So good.
Good.
Yeah. So thank you for asking. I'm sorry. I missed you as well.
All right, we will. We'll catch up. And you're gonna come. You're gonna come east at some point during the summer.
Oh yeah, of course.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, I'll be in New York for about 3 weeks, sometime this summer anyway.
Well, I see. Your two most recent new loves, the grandson and the granddog. They're hitting it off.
really had a great time. Dog loves him and he loves the dog.
He's so cute. I love it. Sid, I appreciate it, and we'll have some recapping to do next week. We'll have
next week's gonna be interesting.
Well, and also start to it's all kind of coming together. You got Florida in the offing, and Florida Derby, and UAE Derby, and we've got, I suppose, with last week out of the way, the quiet, no prep week, from here on in, it'll be a rocket sled. They changed the date on the first Derby sign above the grandstand at Churchill yesterday, so... So Derby season is really upon us.
There you go.
I appreciate it. Sid Fernando, everybody. Sire Watch, Pedigree Focus. Thanks, Sid.
Yeah, Steve, bye.
I got a terrific note from the great Charlie Bowden. And Charlie reminds that, and Sid picked up on it, on that sub-21 quarter mile. He picked up on Princess Noor, and of course, the great Gary Young. That was a Gary Young production. We had a terrific visit with Gary last week. All the Bloodstock people get a little bit of a little breather before they gear up again. You gotta go, do it all again at OBS. I'm so far behind in like posting anything. I've got a camera full of. I get a couple of things posted, not nearly as much as has been happening. So I got to catch up. We're going to catch up with Dave Hill, who we haven't talked to since the end of football season. But he's ready to go. Oh, no. Oh, I just heard from... I'm just hearing from Dave. All right, but then... just sent a note. All right, Case, can we pull up, or are we okay for another 15 minutes? Yeah? Dave, Case, hold on. Well, I guess not.
PA Bread, I think we've built a brand at this point.
The state of Pennsylvania has the best breeders program in the entire...